Chapter 19. I do not, returned Miss Havisham. I am yellow skin and bone. Camilla brightened when Miss Pocket met with this rebuff, and she murmured, as she plaintively contemplated Miss Havisham, poor dear soul. Certainly not to be expected to look well, poor thing. The idea. And how are you? Said Miss Havisham to Camilla. As we were close to Camilla then, I would have stopped as a matter of course, only Miss Havisham wouldn't stop. We swept on, and I felt that I was highly obnoxious to Camilla. Thank you, Miss Havisham, she returned. I am as well as can be expected. Why, what's the matter with you? Asked Miss Havisham, with exceeding sharpness. Nothing worth mentioning, replied Camilla. I don't wish to make a display of my feelings, but I have habitually thought of you more in the night than I am quite equal to. Then don't think of me, retorted Miss Havisham. Very easily said, remarked Camilla, amiably repressing a sob, while a hitch came into her upper lip, and her tears overflowed. Raymond is a witness, what ginger and sal volatile I am obliged to take in the night. Raymond is a witness, what nervous jerkings I have in my legs. Chokings and nervous jerkings, however, are nothing new to me, when I think with anxiety of those I love. If I could be less affectionate and sensitive, I should have a better digestion, and an iron set of nerves. I am sure I wish it could be so. But as to not thinking of you in the night, the idea. Here, a burst of tears. The Raymond referred to, I understood to be the gentleman present, and him I understood to be Mr. Camilla. He came to the rescue at this point, and said in a consolatory and complimentary voice, Camilla, my dear, it is well known that your family feelings are gradually undermining you to the extent of making one of your legs shorter than the other. I am not aware, observed the grave lady whose voice I had heard but once, that to think of any person is to make a great claim upon that person, my dear. Miss Sarah Pocket, whom I now saw to be a little dry brown corrugated old woman, with a small face that might have been made of walnut shells, and a large mouth like a cat's without the whiskers, supported this position by saying, no, indeed, my dear. Hem. Thinking is easy enough, said the grave lady. What is easier, you know? Assented Miss Sarah Pocket. Oh, yes, yes, cried Camilla, whose fermenting feelings appeared to rise from her legs to her bosom. It's all very true. It's a weakness to be so affectionate, but I can't help it. No doubt my health would be much better if it was otherwise, still I wouldn't change my disposition if I could. It's the cause of much suffering, but it's a consolation, to know I possess it, when I wake up in the night. Here another burst of feeling. Miss Havisham and I had never stopped all this time, but kept going round and round the room. Now, brushing against the skirts of the visitors. Now, giving them the whole length of the dismal chamber. There's Matthew, said Camilla. Never mixing with any natural ties, never coming here to see how Miss Havisham is. I have taken to the sofa with my stayless cut, and have lain there hours, insensible, with my head over the side, and my hair all down, and my feet I don't know where, much higher than your head, my love, said Mr. Camilla. I have gone off into that state, hours and hours, on account of Matthew's strange and inexplicable conduct, and nobody has thanked me. Really, I must say I should think not, interposed the grave lady. You see, my dear, added Miss Sarah Pocket, a blandly vicious personage, the question, to put to yourself is, who did you expect to thank you, my love? Without expecting any thanks, or anything of the sort, resumed Camilla, I have remained in that state, hours and hours, and Raymond is a witness of the extent to which I have choked, and what the total inefficacy of ginger has been, and I have been heard at the piano for tuners across the street, where the poor mistaken children have even supposed it to be pigeons cooing at a distance, and now, to be told, here Camilla put her hand to her throat, and began to be quite chemical, as to the formation of new combinations there. When this same Matthew was mentioned, Miss Havisham stopped me and herself, and stood looking at the speaker. This change had a great influence in bringing Camilla's chemistry to a sudden end. Matthew will come and see me at last, said Miss Havisham, sternly, when I am laid on that table. That will be his place there, striking the table with her stick, at my head. And yours will be there. And your husband's there. And Sarah Pocket's there. And Georgina's there. Now you all know where to take your stations, when you come to feast upon me. And now go. At the mention of each name, she had struck the table with her stick in a new place. She now said, walk me, walk me. And we went on again. I suppose there's nothing to be done, exclaimed Camilla, but comply and depart. It's something to have seen the object of one's love and duty, for even so short a time. I shall think of it with a melancholy satisfaction, when I wake up in the night. I wish Matthew could have that comfort, but he sets it at defiance. I am determined not to make a display of my feelings, but it's very hard to be told one wants to feast on one's relations, as if one was a giant, and to be told to go. The bare idea. Mr. Camilla interposing, as Mrs. Camilla laid her hand upon her heaving bosom, that lady assumed an unnatural fortitude of manner which I supposed to be expressive of an intention to drop and choke when out of view, and kissing her hand to Miss Havisham, was escorted forth. Sarah Pocket and Georgina contended who should remain last. But, Sarah was too knowing to be outdone, and ambled round Georgina with that artful slipperiness, that the latter was obliged to take precedence. Sarah Pocket then made her separate effect of departing with, bless you, Miss Havisham dear, and with a smile of forgiving pity on her walnut-shell countenance for the weaknesses of the rest. While Estella was away lighting them down, Miss Havisham still walked with her hand on my shoulder, but more and more slowly. At last she stopped before the fire, and said, after muttering and looking at it some seconds, this is my birthday, Pip. I was going to wish her many happy returns, when she lifted her stick. I don't suffer it to be spoken of. I don't suffer those who were here just now, or anyone, to speak of it. They come here on the day, but they dare not refer to it. Of course I made no further effort to refer to it. On this day of the year, long before you were born, this heap of decay, stabbing with her crutched stick at the pile of cobwebs on the table, but not touching it, was brought here. It and I have worn away together. The mice have gnawed at it, and sharper teeth than teeth of mice have gnawed at me. She held the head of her stick against her heart as she stood looking at the table, she in her once white dress, all yellow and withered, the once white cloth all yellow and withered. Everything around, in a state to crumble under a touch. When the ruin is complete, said she, with a ghastly look, and when they lay me dead, in my bride's dress on the bride's table which shall be done, and which will be the finished curse upon him, so much the better, if it is done on this day. She stood looking at the table, as if she stood looking at her own figure lying there. I remained quiet. Estella returned, and she too remained quiet. It seemed to me that we continued thus for a long time. In the heavy air of the room, and the heavy darkness that brooded in its remoter corners, I even had an alarming fancy that Estella and I might presently begin to decay. At length, not coming out of her distraught state by degrees, but in an instant, Miss Havisham said, let me see you two play cards. Why have you not begun? With that, we returned to her room, and sat down as before. I was beggared, as before, and again, as before, Miss Havisham watched us all the time, directed my attention to Estella's beauty, and made me notice it the more, by trying her jewels on Estella's breast and hair. Estella, for her part, likewise treated me as before, except that she did not condescend to speak. When we had played some half dozen games, a day was appointed for my return, and I was taken down into the yard, to be fed in the former dog-like manner. There too, I was again left to wander about as I liked. it is not much to the purpose, whether a gate in that garden wall which I had scrambled up to peep over on the last occasion was, on that last occasion, open or shut. Enough that I saw no gate then, and that I saw one now. As it stood open, and as I knew that Estella had let the visitors out for, she had returned with the keys in her hand, I strolled into the garden, and strolled all over it. It was quite a wilderness, and there were old melon frames and cucumber frames in it, which seemed in their decline to have produced a spontaneous growth of weak attempts at pieces of old hats and boots, with now and then a weedy offshoot into the likeness of a battered saucepan. When I had exhausted the garden, and a greenhouse with nothing in it but a fallen down grapevine and some bottles, I found myself in the dismal corner upon which I had looked out of the window. Never questioning for a moment that the house was now empty, I looked in at another window, and found myself, to my great surprise, exchanging a broad stare with a pale young gentleman with red eyelids and light hair. This pale young gentleman quickly disappeared, and reappeared beside me. He had been at his books, when I had found myself staring at him, and I now saw that he was inky. "Halloa," said he, "young fellow." Halloa being a general observation which I had usually observed to be best answered by itself, I said, "Halloa," politely omitting "young fellow." "Who let you in?" said he. "Miss Estella." "Who gave you leave to prowl about?" "Miss Estella." "Come and fight," said the pale young gentleman. What could I do but follow him? I have often asked myself the question since. But what else could I do? His manner was so final, and I was so astonished, that I followed where he led, as if I had been under a spell. "Stop a minute, though," he said, wheeling round before we had gone many paces. "I ought to give you a reason for fighting too. There it is." In a most irritating manner he instantly slapped his hands against one another, daintily flung one of his legs up behind him, pulled my hair, slapped his hands again, dipped his head, and butted it into my stomach. The bull-like proceeding last mentioned, besides that it was unquestionably to be regarded in the light of a liberty, was particularly disagreeable just after bread and meat. I therefore hit out at him, and was going to hit out again, when he said, "Aha! Would you?" and began dancing backwards and forwards in a manner quite unparalleled within my limited experience. "Laws of the game," said he. Here, he skipped from his left leg onto his right. "Regular rules." Here, he skipped from his right leg onto his left. "Come to the ground, and go through the preliminaries." Here, he dodged backwards and forwards, and did all sorts of things, while I looked helplessly at him. I was secretly afraid of him, when I saw him so dexterous. But, I felt morally and physically convinced, that his light head of hair could have had no business in the pit of my stomach, and that I had a right to consider it irrelevant, when so obtruded on my attention. Therefore, I followed him without a word, to a retired nook of the garden, formed by the junction of two walls and screened by some rubbish. On his asking me if I was satisfied with the ground, and on my replying yes, he begged my leave to absent himself for a moment, and quickly returned with a bottle of water and a sponge dipped in vinegar. "Available for both," he said, placing these against the wall, and then fell to pulling off not only his jacket and waistcoat, but his shirt too, in a manner at once light-hearted, business-like, and bloodthirsty. Although he did not look very healthy, having pimples on his face, and a breaking out at his mouth, these dreadful preparations quite appalled me. I judged him to be about my own age, but he was much taller, and he had a way of spinning himself about that was full of appearance. For the rest, he was a young gentleman in a gray suit when not denuded for battle, with his elbows, knees, wrists, and heels considerably in advance of the rest of him as to development. My heart failed me when I saw him squaring at me with every demonstration of mechanical nicety, and eyeing my anatomy as if he were minutely choosing his bone. I never have been so surprised in my life as I was when I let out the first blow, and saw him lying on his back, looking up at me with a bloody nose, and his face exceedingly foreshortened. But he was on his feet directly, and after spawning himself with a great show of dexterity began squaring again. The second greatest surprise I have ever had in my life was seeing him on his back again, looking up at me out of a black eye. His spirit inspired me with great respect. He seemed to have no strength, and he never once hit me hard, and he was always knocked down. But he would be up again in a moment, spawning himself or drinking out of the water bottle, with the greatest satisfaction in seconding himself according to form, and then came at me with an air and a show that made me believe he really was going to do for me at last. He got heavily bruised, for I am sorry to record that the more I hit him, the harder I hit him. But he came up again and again and again, until at last he got a bad fall with the back of his head against the wall. Even after that crisis in our affairs, he got up and turned round and round confusedly a few times, not knowing where I was, but finally went on his knees to his sponge and threw it up, at the same time panting out, "That means you have won." He seemed so brave and innocent that although I had not proposed, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.